that. I just grabbed it because it was quickest to grab, but I hate that. Hold that thing up to my ear. So, okay, well, how are you doing? I thank you for calling me back. I know I bombarded you with stuff today. How's your day?
I'm fine. Pretty extensive emails you're sending here.
I know.
I'm sorry. If you want to send this many documents, you're going to need to do it by, you know, like a cloud or something.
Cause okay.
I'm not able to keep this. I'm going to have to move everything.
Is it on your phone? Is that the problem?
No, it's just our emails can't hold this much.
Okay. I'm sorry. I can... Do you want me to, even with what I already sent you, do you want me to put that on the cloud or something so that you don't have to, so you can just delete it so
no,
you don't have to worry about it?
I'll do it.
Okay.
I'll do it. I have other, I'm just saying.
I'm know, sorry about that.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit because I think you're maybe a little confused about my role.
Okay.
Like I don't have any ability to review the state court aspects of this.
The what part? I missed what you just said. The what aspects?
The state court, like the what
right.
happened in divorce court.
Right.
I really have no ability to do anything in those areas. So the only two things I can review, the most obvious one is Mary Beth Osbrooks. I mean,
right.
So I review actions taken in bankruptcy court.
Right.
So you know, it's the schedules that you felt like that were inaccurate. I think you're some things you just might not understand about bankruptcy. Like, for example, on the schedules when it says that your wife owned it by that you had an interest in the house by deed only.
Mm-hmm.
That just means that you weren't on the mortgage. It doesn't mean that you didn't have any rights to it or anything. It just means that you weren't liable on the debt.
But so, I wasn't. Like, I took it to mean also that, and one of the reasons is because in divorce court, in the state part, Miss Story came in and used the exact same narrative, but she said, you know, she referred to my wife as the owner, you know, and disqualifying, you know, like we didn't sign any leases, you know, so they can't be valid. And that's not the law. The law is that it only takes one owner, and the owner that's in possession can sign leases, and they're perfectly valid. And even if it went into foreclosure, there's the Protecting Tenants at Foreclosure Act that still, unless it was purchased by a family planning to live in it, if any investor bought it, they still would be entitled to live out their leases, where instead they just got thrown out in the streets, you know. And she had misquoted all the laws, and when she said, you know, she made it sound like I didn't have any investment in it when I had invested all of, you know, I had 2/3 of the down payment for the house, you know, so it wasn't just, you know, marital interests were like in Tennessee, even if you're not on the deed, you're both, you know, entitled to it. It was a situation where my premarital cash was in there and nobody even notified me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can see that'd be troubling. It's just the bankruptcy schedules appear accurate to me.
Really?
Based on what I know and everything that...
So even not putting any support down or anything like that, I did misunderstand a little bit of the support thing when I was looking at it, because it said something about past, present, support, due, and it looked like At first, I took it to mean at all, and that wasn't the case because she had been our primary wage. She's a licensed architect with an MIT degree, and so she had been our primary wage earner for over a decade. And for the last 3 years, she was the only one employed. So I wasn't even employed. So, and that wasn't that was all by agreement at the time. There was other things that I was doing, and I contributed a lot throughout the marriage. It's just that. My role at that time wasn't with the actual job. So when all this happened, I didn't have access to any of our funds because she had changed all that to where, I didn't have access to that. I didn't have access to credit lines anymore that used to be shared. So, you know, she had the attorneys and, you know, the wealthy family, and I just had nothing to stand on. The only leverage I had was the house, because I lived in the house still, and she didn't have any legal grounds to kick me out of the house. And when they went this route with the bankruptcy, that took away the only leverage I had. And because they didn't give me any notice of it, I couldn't try to save it. You know, like my mom had said that she would loan the money to bring it current the day that I was finally in divorce court. But attorney Story said it's already too late. You can't do that, you know. And it's like, you know, the 14th Amendment, you know, you're supposed to have, before somebody cancels a property interest, and I had two property interests, it was my tenants were my only cash flow at that time, paying for my consumables. My wife was paying all the mortgages. I didn't know that she had stopped.
No, but if with your wife being on the mortgage, because it was part of the divorce, you know, it could be sold in the divorce. The family court is the one who decided that the property could be sold, and the
right, but
bankruptcy was just saying that the interest could be sold, and because there wasn't any money left over, that's why you didn't receive any of it, is because the secured creditors.
Right. I understand part of that, but what I'm saying is, this happened before we ever mentioned our divorce. This was our first day in court. My lawyers had been on the job 3 days, and they wouldn't even give us time for them to review the case because I had hired a previous attorney and borrowed the money from my mom. I hired a previous attorney, and she failed to do anything. I mean, she just didn't do anything. So it's like 3 days left with everything in my life on the line. I went and I hired another set of attorneys, and, I mean, they had... That was all they did for 3 days, and they went in there and asked for an extension because, I mean, this was, I mean, virtually going to render me homeless. I mean, I wasn't, you know, they were, and without any income.
You're talking about in bankruptcy court?
No, I mean by taking my house away.
But wasn't that in family court?
But what I'm saying is that they took my house away in family court on the first day in court, when I only had attorneys for 3 days. We still never even talked about the divorce. They never even started discovering.
I know, but see, this is what I need you to focus on. I need to focus on what happened that you think was a problem or illegal in bankruptcy court.
Right.
I can't go back to family court.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
I don't have any control of those people.
I understand so, that. I'm trying to show you the collusion between them, you know, and how they were deceptively working together against me. I understand I'm probably bogging you down with...
I really need you to focus on, you know, what I can do. Because there's... I mean, I have... hundreds of cases.
I'm sorry.
It sounds like you've had a terrible time with all this, and I feel badly for you, but there's literally nothing I can do. And
well, what about,
it doesn't involve the bankruptcy court.
Right, I understand that. And the bankruptcy court was how they set the stage for all this, too. What notice was I due that I never got? I mean, was I due a 341 notice? Was I due the divorce thing? Was I supposed to contest it even though I wasn't given any notice? What was supposed to happen with me that didn't?
Well, do you think that you were a creditor?
My understanding is the 341s are for not just creditors, but anybody that has a financial interest in the property, whether that's a secured interest or any other interest.
Well, the creditors are given notice of the meeting, so those are the people that are entitled to notice.
Not people that have a security interest in something, like joint owners to property? One of the trustees, John, that ended up finishing it up, said that I should have been given a 341 notice from the very beginning.
Well, you may have been. I have to check on that. You didn't receive notice.
I didn't. I never got any notice. Actually, discovered it just right before the divorce, and I mean, there was a couple of months there where me and my wife were still communicating fine, and nobody told me anything. And even when I finally accidentally discovered it, and I looked it up in Pacer and found out what happened, because that was all public, the next day she had the order of protection put against me, you know, and then the whole onslaught came for the divorce before that, and she wouldn't even tell me, because I knew that in bankruptcy you could either keep or forfeit the home, and all I was trying to do was find out from her whether or not she was keeping or forfeiting the home, because I couldn't understand. I mean, when I found everything.
You can only keep the home if you can make the payments on it.
No. I understand that. But since she had been paying them and I had been locked out of them, and she had promised to pay them, I didn't have any way of knowing they ever weren't paid, because any notices got sent to her apartment because she moved out. So, I mean, I had no zero notices, and even when I tried to directly ask her, she refused to answer that and then used the emails where I was asking her to try to justify an order of protection, which weren't even mean or violent. I had two tenants that were real concerned about whether or not they were still going to have a place to live, you know, besides my obvious concerns. But I was provided, I mean, and that's what, you know, the 14th Amendment and all of that, with my understanding with entirety property, there has to be a means test, and the benefit has to outweigh the loss of the other spouse, and, you know, there wasn't any of that, you know. I mean, I don't know if they ever did a means test, but they...
The means test is about whether or not you qualify for Chapter 7 or Chapter 13 bankruptcy. I'm not aware of any... I don't know about the 14th Amendment aspect of this.
Well, the Constitution, isn't the Constitution apply? When I was reading the bankruptcy code, it said, and I mean, Maul, this is real confusing to me, so please forgive me where I'm wrong, but it was saying that these things apply unless some other federal law supersedes it or something like that. But my understanding...
I mean, the 14th Amendment will always apply. It's the Constitution. But, I mean, the bankruptcy code is set up in application. So let me just run the...
It just seems strange to me that... I mean, it just seems wrong to me, or crazy or insane or something, that I wouldn't even receive a notice. I understand that the people need to get paid their money in order for you to keep it. All that I'm completely down with. But by the time I found out about it, and my mom offered to bring it to current, the attorney Story in family court, I mean, this is all the first day I'm in family court. My attorneys have been on the job for 3 days, and she tells me it's already too late now. We can't bring it current and keep it because it's too close to foreclosure, or it's too far in the bankruptcy, which they schemed, you know. They never told me beforehand, and I shouldn't be finding out after a point where I cannot even attempt to save my property interest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That part doesn't make any sense to me. So, I mean, that just, I can't, And again, when I was kicked out, I was given 5 days' notice. If it went into foreclosure, I would have had months. I would have had a right to redemption. I would have had all kinds of things that I was basically deprived of because of the fact that they circumvented my rights, sold it before it went into foreclosure. Even my tenants would have been able to finish their leases if it went into foreclosure, you know, and it wasn't my intent for it to go into foreclosure. Again, I never knew that a single payment was missed and didn't have any way to know except for my wife to tell me, you know. Because, again, I wasn't on the mortgage, and, you know, and they had one address, and because I wasn't on the mortgage, I mean, I had access to all those accounts. I managed all our finances for years, but when she moved out, she stayed up that night, and she changed all that stuff to where I didn't have access to it anymore, and, so I didn't have any way to know, and then she changed, you know, the mailing address to her an apartment. And so short of the bankruptcy court letting me know, which I think they should have, I don't understand, like, even the parts where, like, what do you call that, where it's adversarial divorce or something like that. And part of that section that I emailed you to, it was saying about the attorney's responsibility. That's really where I'm more interested is how, what I understand where attorney stories scammed all day long, and that judge did, and I understand there's nothing you can do about that in the whole world. My part that I'm trying to understand is, they set the stage with the bankruptcy months in advance, and I was denied notice, and then even at the end, they put in for an emergency request to sell the property, which I haven't got everything to you yet, but that was after attorney Story had forced me to leave all my personal property there. So it wasn't marital property that was left there. It was my personal property, which they forced me to leave there. And then she went and got an emergency order from the, she went and had Mr. Koval, that was working with Osbrooks, go get a bankruptcy order to emergency, to sell it or to discard all the personal property, just to be mean to me. And for literally no other reason. And if I would have been a day later in just jumping in a U-Haul and going down there with my 75-year-old mom, I mean, she was literally ready to pull a dumpster up to the house and just throw all my stuff in it just because, you know, she hated me because I had called her out a couple times as being a thief. And, you know, it just... She manipulated...
Originally, when you emailed me, you said that it didn't seem like you had an issue, that you didn't want to pursue your ex-wife.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't want to pursue my ex-wife. It's these damn attorneys that all worked in bad faith, illegally.
No, but I mean, Mary Brooke Osbrooks would have gotten all of her information from your wife, so if...
Well, if the deed...
anything that she did wrong, it's likely also to implicate your wife, just so you know.
I would think that they would have either the trustee or Mary Osbrooks would be required to check the deed, you know, to where it wouldn't be... You know, I wouldn't think that everything... I understand I want to be careful not to implicate my ex-wife. I don't want to hurt her more, because I think all of this has... I mean, she lost as much money as I did. You know, it's worth $800,000 right now. We both lost $250,000 as of today. So, I mean...
I think that the reason that... I mean, I'm not sure, and I can look into this further, but it looks like the reason you weren't contacted about the sale is because of the ex parte order of protection.
No, that didn't come until much later. That was months later. So,
no, I mean, it's attached to the sale order. I mean, it's attached to the motion to sell. There's an ex parte order of protection extending pending final hearing and order granting motion to sell marital residence.
Right. They use that to keep me away from it. Even though I did nothing wrong, that they used that to keep me away from being able to talk to the mortgage companies or trying to save the property after I found out about it. But I didn't find out about it until after the attorney already said that it was already too late, and where it had been filed for bankruptcy a couple of months before. Like my divorce, first divorce hearing, I think was 8-1 or something like that, and she filed for bankruptcy 4-26 or something like that. I mean, that was months and months and months earlier. That if I had known about it, there was no ex parte back then. I mean, we got along fine. She came over to the house, you know. I mean, there was nothing, you know. And even after she filed bankruptcy, we still, I mean, got along fine. I had no clue. I mean, up to 3 days before, you know, we have communications that are just absolutely fine, you know. So it's just all of that was used after I learned about the bankruptcy, and then boom, the next day, and then story started whacking me from every which side, knowing that with the ADHD I just couldn't fight back against, you know. I mean, there's literally like a half dozen attorneys that were against me, and even to this day, I can't even get a HUD-1 settlement statement for the house, you know, my own property, to see even where the money went, you know, which is insane, because I was a realtor for 17 years, and I know what the laws are, and for real estate, and I know what the laws are about a HUD-1, you know, both the closing company and the broker have to have it within arm's reach any time during business hours, you know. So for them to deny me that, I just don't. And also they coerced, and again, this was in family court, but it was, they had coerced my signature on the listing agreement, which didn't make sense, because I understand if somebody can order something to be sold, they can order it to be sold, but my understanding has always been if you sign something, you're in agreement with it, and I wasn't in agreement with it. So if he's going to order it to be sold, then as far as I was concerned, he could sign it. But after I did some, anyways, he threatened to incarcerate me, and so I signed the darn thing, and then I called the brokers, or I contacted the brokers right afterwards and said this was done under duress, and you know, it's null and void, and they basically told me they didn't care what I thought, it was going to get sold on such and such a date. And I know that by real estate law, a seller is not bound by selling a listing agreement until there's a binding agreement date. You have a purchase and sale agreement that's binding, at which point then the seller can't back out. Before that, the seller can back out. They might owe the broker some expenses for advertising, but they can't force the seller to sell their home because they signed a piece of paper. So when I researched that, I found out that they're not supposed to coerce me to sign it. They're supposed to let the clerk of the court sign it, but then there's a right to redemption, and I think that's what they were trying to get around, was my right to redemption, which also would have applied if it was in a foreclosure. So it was like all these things that were supposed to protect me, they circumvented, you know, in both courts. And I just don't, I'm trying to wrap my head around who did what, and I know that it took participation in the federal court also, because it was so precisely timed, and also it was just no notification. I mean, it just doesn't, you know, again, so somebody's job, it's got to be somebody's job, her attorney, somebody's job to check the deed and, you know, make sure all the property owners are notified, you know. And that, like I said, John McLemore or whatever, I talked to him extensively about it, and he said, you know, he had sold more foreclosures than anybody else in Tennessee, and, you know, if he had saw that on the deed, then, yeah, he would have had some homework to do first. And
okay, so let's be clear then. What you're the complaint you have, let's focus your complaints with me so that it's...
Okay.
So your complaint is when you send me an email saying that you're complaining that you did not get notice of the sale, and, you know, if it's true you didn't get a motion to sell, you didn't have notice of a motion to sell, then, you know, you have the option of going back to bankruptcy court and, you know, asking for relief in that manner. Since it's already been done, you know, that, but, I mean, it's still no evidence that there was any fraud or anything going on. But, I mean, I think you need to focus on, like, because I'm not finding that you received notice of it. So it could be that they did not give you notice.
Mm-hmm.
And you may want to file in bankruptcy court, you know, saying that that the sale, that you didn't receive notice of the sale.
So
have you talked to a bankruptcy attorney about that?
I don't have any money for attorneys anymore. I wish I wouldn't have spent the $10,000 that I did, because it was gone and the house was gone. And after that, they said I was uncollectible because I didn't have any assets left to secure anything. So no, I'm just I've been trying to fight this thing myself, like I said, for 2 years, you know, 12, 16 hours a day trying to, and trying to hardly get anything.
Now, at this point, please send me one email.
Okay.
Saying exactly that this is what your complaint is, because I will look into it, and I'm not sure, this is normally something that parties handle themselves. I'm not sure that this is something that my office can do anything about, but I will look into it.
Okay, thank you.
I'll tell you what I can do. But
okay,
any complaints you have about, I don't, you know, everything that happened in state court, I understand it's related, mm-hmm. but I have all that information, so I need specific.
Okay, let me tell you just about one other situation, and then you tell me what you need. But the situation was when John Koval or Alex Koval put in for the emergency order to sell the house, and it was timed precisely with Virginia Story doing the same thing in the other court, and it was specifically to deprive me of my personal property that was inside the house. That was totally bad faith. I'm not, because the judge, unless somebody told the judge didn't know that was my stuff, you know, and they based the order off of a previous, they based the order off of the previous court order in the domestic court, but they already had on file a newer court order showing that they had forced me to leave my stuff there. So in other words, the judge looked at the 8-1 order and said, okay, they've already, you know, he's got all this stuff out of there or whatever, so they can go ahead and get rid of the rest of it. Well, the 829 order from divorce court said, no, you're not allowed to take anything out of there. You got 5 days, the police are going to take you out, and blah, blah, blah. So as soon as I couldn't afford an attorney anymore, they changed everything in divorce court, and they totally screwed me over. But again, the fact that Attorney Story was threatening me, trying to get $3,000 out of my mom, and when I didn't do that, they put in an order to sell or to discard my stuff, and there's a $10,000 personal property exemption in the state of Tennessee, which I had already filed, and I couldn't figure out how in the hell she was getting around that, but I knew she was going to, so we jumped in a U-Haul and headed down there and got my stuff, and then afterwards, I got back the notice that she had gotten Alex Koval to put in for an emergency order to sell the property at the exact same day that she had, and if I was a day later, she would have had my stuff dumped in a dumpster, and again, that's horrible, horrible, bad faith, fraud, something going on there to where for them to collude together like that, you know?
Well, Mr. Fenton, I mean, there's no reason to think, I mean, your wife would have requested that he file an emergency motion because her family court attorney recommended it.
I really don't think this. A lot of this is so complex and required so many different attorneys to be involved in this that there's no way that she could have done this without, you know, without a judge, for example, on my side that signed away my rights.
They would have had to have her permission to sign this order. But the first thing we need to figure out is about the notice and what's going on there. So please send me an email asking me to investigate that, and
okay.
I will look into that.
Okay, and you don't want me to send you anything about the other thing right now, but we'll just do the one thing at a time?
Yeah, because it's related. I mean, if you're saying it is that the fact that they filed the motion is because of collusion with the state court, and there's not much I can do to investigate that, but once we deal with I'm not sure what I can do about you not receiving notice, but
so
I will look into
it. Can you tell me just about the adversarial proceeding part? Is that something that's usually initiated on the other side, or is that something that they should have initiated on their side because they knew that I had an adversarial interest, or how is that usually initiated?
I mean, you should have just. What do you mean by? I don't understand.
I saw some language in about the adversarial proceedings or something where you could have a trial with the. With the bankruptcy judge, and they would determine, and that they had some kind of means test in the bankruptcy side of determining whether or not the amount of the expected proceeds from the sale were expected to cover the debt and be of enough benefit to substantiate taking the home from the other spouse. And that was all in bankruptcy court, my understanding. Does that all sound like foreign to you?
I mean, if the sale, it's a little, this is complicated because it seems like had your rights to the home already been extinguished in the family court?
No. Not until months later after filing bankruptcy.
But were the okay? So, but it was before. Did your rights in family court? I mean, the only thing I can think of is that it would make sense here is that you didn't get notice because the family court had already decided that you didn't have rights in the house.
Yeah, that never happened. That was literally months later. I mean,
after the house was sold?
No, it was months after the 341 meeting and after she had filed bankruptcy.
I'm not sure that you should have gotten notice of the 341, but you should have gotten notice of the sale. But if you had,
I should have had a notice before this. I mean, understand, I should have got a notice before the sale so I could contest it or try to fight for my rights because it was my property too, right?
Well, not if the divorce court, did the divorce say it wasn't your house?
No, the divorce never said it wasn't my house. They never took, I had to sign, they've coerced me into signing a listing agreement, so they wouldn't have coerced me to sign it if I didn't still own it. You know, so they coerced me to sign a listing agreement, and then they kicked me out of it like 5 days later, and they gave her permission to sign any closing documents. I'm not aware of anybody ever taking my name off of it or saying that I don't own it or anything of that nature.
Okay, well, I'm going to look into that issue. I'm not sure about, I mean, adversary proceedings, you know, wouldn't it be done? I mean, that's not a common, I'm not really sure about that. I don't know.
Okay, and the means
that's
test?
I've never heard of that.
Okay, and
the means test is to determine whether or not you qualify for 7 or 13 bankruptcy. So I don't know what.
Oh, I had seen something about a means test specifically regarding the sale of the house. It wasn't, I understand the 7 or the 13, and I understand that part, but I saw something where it had specifically to do with property that was deeded as tenants in the entirety, which is what ours was, and so since you are taking property away from the other party and not relieving them of any of their debt or even addressing that, and that they had to have some, it had to pass some threshold or a means test to justify that it was worth depriving the other party of their home, you know. And so that was, I'll see if I can find that part in of the bankruptcy stuff that I was looking through and just email you a little bit about that and just and see what you see what you think about that. It's all very confusing for me, you know, and that was what John told me too. He told me, you know, when I asked him where I could look up this code, he told me, and he's like, good luck, it's the second most complicated piece of law to tax code. And it's like, you know,
it's very difficult.
It is, and you know, for me trying to learn that plus trying to learn all this other stuff, you know, simultaneously while in the meantime, I mean, if it wasn't for my mom, I'd be living under a bridge right now, and it just seems insane that I wouldn't even have got notice except for, you know, 5 days notice and booted out in the street, and, you know, I wouldn't even have been able to keep my personal property because I wouldn't have had a place to put it, you know? I mean, it's just insane.
Okay.
But anyways,
right, well,
I appreciate your help.
I have to go.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. I'll work on that and have something to you by tomorrow morning.
Please, Mr. Fenton.
I know.
Mean, I want like 3 sentences.
I'll do my.
I have so many emails from you.
Okay.
Let's keep it short and simple.
Okay, I'll do my best. I'm not good at short and simple. I try to explain the justification, because if you just believe everybody else's narrative, then people just think I'm a monster and I deserved it, and the hell with it, who cares? You know, and it's like, so, you know, but it was all done by fraud.
You just have to remember that it's, you know, as the law is difficult for you to wade through, you want to make things simple for people so that they can see what your claims are without, you know, reinventing the wheel. So just try to keep, I'm going to look into this, but it would help me just to have it of record that this is what you're complaining about.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and as far as the Alex Cavall part, because I am complaining about that too, but you want me to leave that off for right now, and I'll just, and we'll just deal with just this part right now, just the notice?
If you can say it in 3 sentences, then you can add it. If you can't, then don't.
Okay, I can. But, all right, thank you very much, ma'am. I appreciate your call. You have a good night.
Thank you.
All right.
You too.
Bye-bye.